Hey guys, welcome back to Cult of Man. I'm Kyle. Noah is off kicking ass in his neck of the woods today. But fear not, we actually have a really true badass guest today. This guy, if you don't know who he is, you're going to know shortly. Mr. Beck Lover is a New York City-based podcaster and, just all-around Renaissance man. He is a first-generation American of Albanian descent, has an interesting family history. His family history is tied into the history of the world. He's learned a thing or two about a thing or two. He came up in New York City sort of nightlife industry. And with, I guess, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Beck Lover. Beck, how are you, man?
Well, happy New Year, man. First podcast of the year for me.
Oh, fantastic. I'm honored that you would
starting my year with you, man.
Beautiful, beautiful, man. Couldn't have asked for more. So I guess to begin, man, I guess I should tell the viewers, one of the things I'm really impressed with you is there's no bravado. There's no pretense. There's no putting on airs with you. You have one of the most interesting podcasts I've ever watched. And for those of you that want to check out our buddy Beck here, the Beck Lover Beck Lover channel, Beck Lover show on YouTube.
Beck Lover channel on YouTube, the Beck Lover podcast, also known as the Comeback Team. Yeah. But just type in B-E-K Lover and all my content pops up. That's B like boy, E like Edward, K like Kimberly, Beck Lover.
Great stuff. I mean, this guy talks about everything from life lessons to geopolitics to theology. You know, you kind of cover it all. And one of the things we like to focus on this particular pod is not only having interesting guests and guys that have actually lived the life, have seen some shit, have learned some shit. What I like about you is you sort of straddle, like, because I know you were raised in New York, but have very strong ties to your family in Albania, which is where your family's from. You know, everything, you know, the Kosovo War, all of these things that you've sort of been through in one way or another. And I guess you get to a point where you're sort of like this experienced dude now. From your perspective, what do you think, I guess first, what do you think is some of the biggest lessons you've learned in your life? If you were to, you know, and I know that's kind of a big question, but of everything you've been to up till now in your life, what have been some of the most important life lessons you've learned? The stuff that you're like, whoa, you know, I couldn't have learned that without going through it, type of stuff. Because you're a man of some experience there.
I know who said that the age of someone is not necessarily the most important thing as far as knowledge or sure. life experience, right? There's some people who become men or women, you know, like adults. Yes. Let's use the word adults probably even better. They become adults way before their time. So when I've traveled to third world countries, I've seen 8-year-olds hustling in the streets, selling cigarettes, water, whatever they can to provide for their family. And to provide for your family has traditionally been a very important responsibility of a man. So I've seen boys that are men.
Sure.
And I've seen men that are still boys and they're in their 60s. I believe it's the experiences we go through in life are the education that we get, and nothing will beat experience. I don't care how many books you read, right? You could read a million right. books about how to play basketball, but Kobe Bryant, may he rest in peace, may have never read a single book about basketball. And just because he practiced every day, his experience will dominate you if you ever played one-on-one.
Right.
Right? So right. experience is something that can either make or break someone. And a lot of times when horrible things happen to us, a lot of people don't make it back out. They go into addiction. They don't know where to go for help. The trauma happens. And what I can tell you, because you're asking me, like, you know, what are my biggest lessons in life? My first lesson is don't get too comfortable. If you're in a good place in your life, don't think that something horrible can happen tomorrow. I've lost family in war. I was underneath the World Trade Center when it got hit. I wasn't expecting that day. I woke up to go to school. I was happy. It was beautiful out. I was a sophomore in college. I could not wait to get to school that day. It was so beautiful out. It was warm. And I watched those two buildings crumble right in front of my eyes. And I saw, and I now know that the world would never have been the same again after that. So, you know, I lost my brother. You know, I call him my brother. People don't understand the relationship. It was my mother's brother. But me and him, we grew up together. He was a little older than me. So he was like my older brother. And we were together for the majority of my life, for 31 years until he passed away in a car accident. I didn't know I was going to lose him. And even though I had these lessons in life where you just never know what's going to happen, the first lesson as an older man, if someone's listening to this podcast, is that try to create as much of a way where you will not have regret later on in your life. Now, what does that mean? That means if you're young and you're listening to this podcast right now, and half the day you're spending on Xbox and smoking weed and drinking and just having fun and going after the excesses of life, you are taking for granted the most important thing in your life, the time that you have. What you lack is wisdom. So if I was a young person and the asset that I have at this stage is time, I need to try to delegate some of this time to elevate my comprehension of life, the world that I live in, and to really figure out what is important in life. And most people that are in their middle ages, going towards the, you know, I'm just hit 40. We look backwards, and we've all heard the stories. You know, you guys don't even know how lucky you are. Time's on your side. You know, don't waste your time. And when I look back on my life, and many people say you've done so much in your life, I feel like I've done nothing, Kyle. I feel like I've done zero compared to what I could have done if I had more intention with my time. I was more organized. I was more focused. And the biggest problem young people have is not trying to succeed. The problem they have is they can't figure out what they want at that age. They don't know who they are yet. They don't realize. They listen to their parents. They listen to this. They listen to that. And a lot of times they shut off their gut, their instinct, which is telling them, hey, I really like this. This is what I should pursue as far as a career, work, whatever it may be. If you can figure out what you love while you're young, I should have been doing this 20 years ago, man. I should have never went to school for finance. I hated math. Right. I went to class. I just wanted a piece of paper. I always really wanted to be an entrepreneur. And I lost years in my 20s listening to everyone saying, well, do this and get the job and slowly work your way up. And to the point where I got to making $500,000-$700,000 a year working for Marriott, the largest hospitality company in the world.
Right.
And I wasn't happy. And I reached the pinnacle of what the corporate world was all about. Because once you reach that limit, you're already in the bottom of the top 1%. I mean, it's people that make 20 million. But once you get over that $500,000 mark, you're really pretty much in the top 0.5% of the corporate world.
Right.
And I wasn't happy. I was going with ambulances to the hospital every week, brother. So the hardest part in life is not making it. It is hard. I think the hardest part is figuring out what you actually want.
Right.
It's
right.
Like the book, you know, in that scene when he's telling the girl he hadn't seen, she thought he died. You know, what do you want? Like, what do you want? Have you ever stopped? It's the beginning of the year. Take a minute. Like, if you didn't do it, I had to do it right before the new year. Take a time, reflect. How did you spend your time? Where are you throwing away the most valuable asset you have, which is valuable to all of us, whether you're young or old? When you're older, you have less time on your side, but you have wisdom. So obviously, the same mistakes over and over again. So number one is not creating situations you're going to regret later in your life. For example, if you're a girl, and right now you may not give a fuck because when you're a young man too, you don't care. Oh, I'll go do this. I'll go do that. It's no big deal. And you don't realize the reputation you create for yourself and that you can't escape it. And you act like it doesn't bother you. I don't care what people think. Well, I would say a lot of people do. And I don't think you should care when people are negative. But what I'm saying is you go out there, you do an OnlyFans, you do an Instagram, you sell your soul. Later on in life now, your looks have faded. You're all wrinkled up. No more facelifts are going to lift your spirits up anymore. The men on the street stop catcalling you. The offers to fly into Dubai and Miami are over. You probably had a million relationships that didn't work out because you didn't have respect for yourself first. Which is probably why a lot of those relationships ended. And then you end up in your late 40s and 50s by yourself or with someone that you really don't love. Because now you have to settle because when you had a chance to make a move, you were too busy chasing what you thought was important when in later on in life you realize it wasn't important. It was maybe more important to build a bond with one person and make money in an honorable way or whatever the case may be. I'm not picking on women that do it, but my point is, you got to really think forward. Am I going to regret this later in my life? Is there even a chance, a 10% chance that I will regret this so much? Because once that genie's out of that bottle, there's no way to fix that. So anyone that's young, that's listening to this, it's okay to feel lost. I felt lost many times in my life, man. What am I doing? Why am I? I worked a million jobs, brother. I've worked everything you can imagine in your life. I worked in waiter, valet parking. I worked in banking. I sold insurance. I tried pitching stock over the phone. I did commercial real estate. My first sales job. I got out of every building in Midtown Manhattan. I worked for a construction company. I had a roofing company. I got and sold out of every building in Midtown Manhattan in the early 2000s, going door to door. I sold timeshare. I worked in nightlife pretty much a long period of my time. I'm technically retired now. I just consult, and I'm more of a socialite. I don't even drink alcohol. I've been drinking over 10 years. I like to go out and just, you know, keep my network still there because I use the nightlife instead of when they use me. I like to entertain people, people that are still in that world. Me, I could care less about it. I don't find it entertaining at all. As a matter of fact, now that I look at it, especially when you're sober, you're like, what the hell did I like so much about this? It's hard to enjoy sober. So not having that, you know, point in your life when you're going to look back and really regret it. But that also goes with your relationships, your family, friends, people that maybe were there for you and you weren't there for them. And, you know, you're holding on to a grudge, maybe over something really stupid. Maybe you fought with your parents and, you know, your pride steps in the way, your ego steps in the way, and you can't make peace because you feel like they should apologize first. Let me tell you something. Something happens to those people, even if they were wrong and you're right, you're going to carry that regret the rest of your life that you didn't talk to your dad one last time, your mom one last time. Whoever it was that you cut out of your life that's really important that you wish was still in your life. And maybe what you said over is stupid or a lot of time has passed. And if they've apologized to you and you don't accept their apology, nah, I don't believe you should let people keep abusing you over and over and over again. But family gets a lot of slack, right? Because it's family. It should be like that. But they shouldn't be purposely hurting you or putting you down. But not being entangled in situations that can be catastrophic to your morale, your soul, your mind, because regret will haunt you. And if you can prevent that as much as you can, especially when you're young, try to think, what will this be like when I'm 30, when I'm 40? Will I pay for this? We live in a very public world now. For me, there was no going back. My opinion's out there. This half the world wants to hug me. The other half wants to eliminate me. So, you know, I get threats all day for voicing my opinions or trying to bridge communities together. Because my message is a message of unity.
Right, right, right.
I don't care what religion you practice, what culture you're from, what skin color you are. I believe all human beings are brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
We have a duty to each other to speak out against injustice and to try to create a harmonious relationship as human beings. I may not agree with your lifestyle choice. I may not agree with your religion. I may not agree with the way you live your life, but especially as an American, which is why I love our nation, we all kind of have to coexist. We have to respect each other's opinions. We should not cross certain boundaries. And this is kind of my advice to anyone that's young, or the future. The second thing is, you will never regret the things you did as much as the things you didn't do. I've seen many things in my life that if I just would have acted a little sooner, a little faster, I didn't procrastinate. Procrastinate will destroy your dreams, will destroy your life. You can't keep saying tomorrow, tomorrow, tomorrow. There's been tomorrow, 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 next Monday, for big parts of my life. I'm not going to sit here and preach to you people that I'm the best human being in the world, and I'm the smartest, and I've done everything. I've done so much wrong in my life.
Right.
And if you've made mistakes, and I don't care where you are in your life, and I don't care how embarrassing some of the stuff you might have done, your life is not over. Your story is not over.
Right.
And some of the greatest saints were the biggest sinners, and that's a fact. Because sometimes you got to go through that pain, whether it's humiliation, being broke, someone passes away, where you literally emptied out completely as a person. That's how change comes. I believe that's how guidance comes also from God. I believe you go through pain. Who did he test more than the people he loved? His prophets. He put them through hell. They went through hell. Abraham got thrown into the fire by his own father. Jesus Christ was persecuted by their own people. There's own people he's trying to save. Noah of the Ark, 950 years, based on biblical and Quranic interpretations, lived for 950 years, preached to everyone around civilization. They all turned their back on him. They made fun of him for 950 years. We get mad because someone picks on us for 4 years in high school.
Right.
There's a lot to be learned. You know, whether you believe these stories to be true or not, they give you character. They give you a deeper understanding. They teach us something that I definitely consider one of my weaknesses. And many people have as a weakness, which is called patience. Patience.
Yeah.
Is of the godly. Having patience when something horrible happens. Having patience when someone passes away. Having patience when you're going through a hard time and money's not right. Having patience when you're sick and hoping that you get better. Having patience when somebody wrongs you to not jump right away. And the Albanian culture will have a very beautiful expression, and I love it. It actually makes a lot of sense. And I'll say it in Albanian when I translate it. They say, Zamen e thryt, ta e kryt. A swollen heart will make you lose your head. Because in that moment of anger, something bad happens to you. If you jump, it's easy to go fight. It's easy to get someone, and then God forbid they get killed. Restrain yourself. Make it own something you have to do as a last option. Patience. Patience in life is a virtue, as they say. It's true to have patience, because when you're going through a hard time, it seems like you're never going to get out of it. When I lost my brother in 2013, I thought life would never, ever get better again. Ever. Ever. It seemed absolutely hopeless. It seemed like I could never laugh again. I was known as a jokester. I was known as the funny guy. Now the funny guy's quiet. I don't want to see no one. I go from being extroverted to introverted. I stay home for 3 years, better playing Xbox. Because I was losing my mind. I didn't want to lose my mind, so I need to play some video games because my heart was swollen.
Right.
I was devastated by his loss. It completely changed the course of my life. It's why I'm doing what I do, by the way.
Right, right.
Because he always told me, you belong out there. People love you. You genuinely care about people. You're very generous. You spend your time helping people you don't even know. So I figured, what better way to do it than do it on a broader scale, right? I can reach more people this way.
Sure.
And for me, that came to fruition once I did my first season of my podcast, which everyone was against me. Even my own family was like, you're wasting your time. You're a f***ing clown for even doing this. I don't know if you curse on your show, but...
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Beat it out, because I'm really trying not to curse. As you saw on Danny Jones' last podcast, I went crazy because I was very comfortable with Danny. And
No, you can speak however you want, Beck. I want you to be yourself.
I try not to use profanity too much. Unfortunately, when you live in New York and New Jersey, all you use is FFF, like it's every consortium here, right? So for me, you know, I just want people to know. Maybe something horrible happened to you. God forbid you were abused. Something devastating happened to you in your life, and you're having a hard time getting over it. It's like that U2 song where you're stuck in a moment and you can't get out of it, right? That's how the lyrics go in that song. There's going to be moments in your life, I promise you, my friends, that you're going to feel stuck. But I am here to tell you that you will not remain stuck. That it might take years. It took me years to get back up after the loss of my brother, God rest his soul, my uncle, that I loved more than anything. He taught me so much about life. He was my best friend. He was the one I ran to when I needed help, that I don't have anyone I can run to anymore. It was the first time I felt naked in life. I had no one to go to. Hey, man, I need $5,000. I'm in trouble. He wouldn't even hesitate. And he nodded like that, you know? And he was very generous.
Sure.
So if you're in that moment in your life, tragedy is just struck. Something horrible has happened to you. I want you to understand you will not be stuck there forever. The sun will come back out again. The storm in your life may last a while, but the most important thing to hold on to, and it was really hard for me to do, but I did, was I always said inside, don't give up. I know now why people take their own lives, man.
Oh.
I get it now, why after a divorce, why men are 9 times more likely to unalive themselves.
Right, Right.
Because overnight you lose your house, you lose your kids. You're now battling someone that you're in charge of taking care of as a man. If you're being a real man, you should be taking care of your wife and your home. And when a man goes through a divorce, they feel like they failed in every single way. And now it's physically manifesting. They're not seeing their children every day. Their ex-spouses may be on very hostile terms. It's devastating. And maybe they deserved it, brother. Maybe they were, you know, not loyal. They were doing things. But sometimes we learn lessons the hard way. And then maybe then you realize after you lost your family just how damn important they really were.
Yeah.
And it can be devastating. You can't forgive yourself. And a lot of men off themselves, brother. And if you're one of those men and you're listening to me, it's okay. There's never a reason to give up. There's never a reason to take your own life, ever. And ask anyone that's tried to and then survived. They had instant regret, like Kevin Hines, who jumped off the Golden State Bridge. Even though he had regret, he's coming on my show this year, God willing. Great guest you should try to get on. And he had instant regret. So that's what patience is like. You got to have faith, man. And for me personally, not to push anyone, for me, that was always been God. Whenever I knew something horrible happened to me, I always turned towards that power. When my brother died, immediately, I wasn't praying during that time. I had prayed on and off my whole life. At that point, I just started praying. I knew I was in trouble. I stopped drinking because I knew when he passed away, I couldn't drink. Because the recipe for disaster is broken heart, drink, or drugs.
For sure, for sure.
You will become an alcoholic. You will go into the abyss. Very few people come back out. I've seen that in my life all the time. People I worked with, people I hung out with, something bad happened to them, and they were out every night just trying to get wasted because they couldn't handle the pain. But you must understand the one that designed us, the one that created us. If you believe in that, I don't know. Do you believe in God?
It's an interesting question. I'm philosophically, Aristotle, the you know, Aristotelian philosophy. I've been studying Islam for basically all of last year, and so I've been listening to, you know, you and I are both big fans of Sheikh Hamza Yusuf. So I'll just put it this way. I'm doing a lot of study. I've got a lot of questions. And, you know, I think wisdom is wisdom. You know, whether I'm getting it from Aristotle or I'm getting it from Sheikh Yusuf or I'm getting it from you or I'm getting it from, you know, whomever, I think wisdom is wisdom. And I think you'd be foolish to not at least hear somebody out. One of the things that I've heard you say, sorry to interrupt, but you said, unless it's you, one of the things you said, and that it stuck with me since I've heard you say it, is unless it's your time, you can survive anything. So unless, you know, like in your case, unless, you know, universe is calling you home, unless God is calling you home, you can get through anything. I think that's very true.
I've seen this manifest many times in my life. First of all, during the Kosovo War, my first cousin, okay, my oldest cousin on my father's side, his name is Javut Aliyai. Even has his own documentary, you can look it up on YouTube, type in the village name, Harich, H like Harry, E like Edward, R-E-Q. The documentary is in English, in Albanian, but if you scroll through, you see shots of him on top of a mountain, reenacting how he survived after he was shot with over 30 bullets.
Oh, I heard about this. I heard you talk about this.
During the coastal area, on top of a mountainside, very high up in the mountain, no matter how high up, enemy troops try to hunt him down and finish him off. We can't even walk, my brother. Tied his leg basically around his neck with his belt so he could use his hands for days with no medical attention. He should not be here. When I got the message, he was dead already. They said they all got killed. None of us knew he was alive. He should not be here today.
Right.
They found him days later with maggots in his legs. Those maggots saved his life. They ate the rotten meat.
Yep.
So he didn't get gangrene. So 9/11, there was people who called out sick that day because they were out the night before partying. They were hungover in the morning.
Right.
They were going to work because it was a beautiful day and they were still stuck in the summer mode. And there was people, I want to make my boss happy today. I'm going to go in early and show him how dedicated I am. And they went to work early and guess what? They never came home. And the guy that's off the night drinking now, you can sit there and call it luck. There's people when the bomb dropped in Hiroshima that were right next to Ground Zero. When the A-bomb dropped, they survived. People hundreds of miles away died from radiation, bro.
You're absolutely right. Like, I mean, I you know, again, I'm an older, wiser man than I was, you know, and I hope I'm living right, you know, that I have more perspective. I'm able to recognize my mistakes and the things that I've done right. But it is interesting when you look back. I can think in the past 10 years, I've had a minimum of about three close calls. One of the biggest was in 2019. I'm headed south on I-5 here in LA, and I'm going from I-5, turning onto the 110 south. It is pouring rain. It's about 4:30 in the morning. I'm on my way to the gym. I've never seen rain this hard. I'm from Chicago. I'm used to weather. They don't get that out here. I've never even seen rain this heavy back in Chicago. And I can't see 10 feet in front of me. I'm going from one freeway to the next. I'm going around a place called Radio Hill, which is Dodger Stadium is right on the other side. And I'm trying to get through this weather. I can literally feel the water building up on the road. I'm trying to just get around. And out of nowhere, the rain loosened a boulder atop Radio Hill. And as I turn around the hill, dun, dun, boom, this massive boulder lands right on the hood of my car. If I had been going any faster, the guys that did the assessments, like, if I had been going any faster, that boulder would have come into the compartment and crushed me to death. My car was a complete wreck. I was completely fine. One of those moments that I'm like, you know what? Okay. You know, that's making me reassess things. And I've always been a pretty thoughtful guy, but I'm telling you, I plumbed the depths of my soul and mind after that one, because
that could have been it to you, Kyle. Yeah. That could have been the end of the game.
Ooh.
So are we on this life just to accrue material objects that we're gonna leave behind? I mean, what is the purpose of your life? I feel like if someone doesn't have a purpose.
Yeah.
I think the first purpose that every human being has, it's a duty, is to seek knowledge. That's number one.
I don't understand how people can't. I'm so curious about the world and about life in the universe. How you cannot want to learn as much as you possibly can. You know, I mean, I have an unquenchable thirst for knowledge, man. And I'm always trying to learn.
As no matter what, even if you don't believe in an afterlife, that's going to help you in this life. Even if you don't like Muslims, for example, or Christians or Chinese people, how are you not going to learn about the Chinese when one out of five people in the world is Chinese? Do you think it would benefit you in business and in society and just as a human being to understand one-fifth of the world? So you should study a little bit of their culture, their history, yeah. Try to understand where they're coming from. Maybe they're still holding a grudge from the opium wars. And now they're about to get the revenge. I'm not saying that's what it is, but you can go into deep thought when you have a base of knowledge. Shouldn't I know a little bit about Muslims if one out of five people in the world is Muslim? Should I know about Christians if I live in America and everyone celebrates Christmas? Should I know how to respect these people and understand where they're coming from and try to find where the commonality is so I can try to bridge this gap, because we don't have to kill each other because of where we believe Jesus was. We both believe in him.
Right,
Muslims,
right.
Christians. We both believe in Jesus Christ. So shouldn't we be looking at what we have in common? We both love him. He said to show compassion even to your enemy. Yet we have two groups of people, because I see it in my comments. It's not very Christian-like. And they're attacking me for trying to bring two groups of people together that are being programmed to destroy each other. And that's not what either faith teaches them.
Right, right.
So this is, and hatred and negativity can only come from ignorance. Right. And that is why it was the duty of human being to seek knowledge, because through that knowledge and that understanding comes compassion, comes patience, comes empathy of you putting your shoes, you know, someone else's shoes on your feet and saying, hey, you know something? I may not agree with what's going on right now. Maybe I support Israel, but hey, you're being a little excessive, or vice versa. Whatever the case may be, I'm not here to get into the politics. But
right. The
hardest thing I had to do was to learn not to hate the people that killed my family. I hated them in the beginning. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to sit here and act like I love Serbians. these are people that massacred my family, oppressed my people for a very long time. They did it to the Bosnians. They wiped out 500,000 of them. I mean, they can sit there and say whatever they want about it, then what do they do to the Bosnians? My point is this. I learned not to put them all in one box.
Right.
I have Serbian friends. I would have never imagined to ever have a Serbian friend when I was younger. I felt like I was betraying my family, betraying my country, betraying my people. But being able to sit down with some of them and hearing them say, you know, I didn't agree with what my government did, no more than I agreed with what our country did, the U.S., when they invaded Iraq. I felt like, I didn't like Saddam Hussein.
Right.
They had the right to invade that nation, and today there's a million dead Iraqis because of us.
Yes, yes.
And there were more than 3,000 that died in New York, which I watched with my own eyes, which traumatized me for the rest of my life. But when are we as Americans going to put our, someone else's, you know, when are we going to go into their shoes and look at it from their side? We see the movies, we see the propaganda, we see all this bullshit. We have no knowledge of these cultures. We don't really know what happened. We don't realize that most of these dictators that we claim we're taking out, we put them in power with the English.
Right. Well, this is the thing. It's like, you know, there's that old saying that those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And I think so much of what's going on, it's sort of like, I guess what we'd call the culture war in this country now. I, you know, as someone who does read history, who does read philosophy, who does explore other cultures, world religions, you know, and who is seeking knowledge constantly, one thing I do see, whether it's whack jobs on the right or whack jobs on the left, or it's, you know, someone from name your religion, you know, condemning somebody else, I can't help but notice that there's always some type of context dropping. There's never that finger pointed back at them. They're never reminding themselves like, oh, okay, you know what? I've made mistakes too. Maybe I should hear this guy out. Maybe I should hear this gal out. Maybe we could just have a conversation instead of screaming at each other. We could compare notes and we both realize, oh yeah, we both made mistakes. We both made, you know, huge, great decisions. And maybe we just need to give each other a little grace, a little room, assess each other as individuals, as opposed to your ethnic group, your religion, what have you. I think it would go a lot further. I think that's probably one of the most beautiful things that I love about my country, about what I love about the U.S., is that we are first individuals under the law, under the Constitution, under the Declaration of Independence. No matter where you're from, no matter what color you are, your religion, your ethnic origin, you can be an American. And the thing that binds us is our rights to live our own lives, the rights to think and practice as we wish, choose our own values. And I would really like to hear more about that than this constant talking about how different we are. Because, yeah, I mean, you can live your life completely differently from me. But as long as we understand that neither one of us has a right to enforce our way of life on each other, that as long as you're not bothering me, you're not harming me, I don't really care. If you're not harming me or other people, it's not an issue. But we seem to be succumbing to this outrage cycle in social media. And I wish we were more proactive about, hey, why don't you fill your Instagram feed with stuff that uplifts you, stuff that fulfills your soul, as opposed to tearing it down. Like that's one of the things, like what you're doing, and this is why I love watching you, is you're just cutting through all that bullshit. You're finding commonalities between world religions. You're finding commonalities between people. I mean, if you can get through the Kosovo War and sit down with people that come from the other side and say, I know you didn't do it, and you're a human being.
And we said, I didn't agree with what we did.
Right, right, right. And that's the thing. Everybody's got to give a little bit.
Just like I acknowledge, as an American born and raised here, remember, I was born and raised here.
Right.
I didn't agree with the policy of my nation. Does that mean I'm guilty because I was vocal against these wars?
Yes.
As someone that came out of the World Trade Center, I don't feel redeemed or a revenge. As a matter of fact, I feel used. I feel like they used our name and those that we lost that day, may they rest in peace and their families. I hope they found some peace 20 something years later, that they've used their memory and their essence to declare war all over the world. destabilize the entire Middle East.
Yes, yes.
And then we wonder why we got people trying to take us out. I mean, every action has a reaction.
Sure, sure.
You know, we put a lot of these people in power. We put Saddam in power to fight Iran. I mean, I can go on and on and on. The problem those people have is they have a very short-term memory. They don't have a long history. When you're dealing with countries that are older than ours and people that have been around a lot longer than we have as Americans, compare us to China. China has a long memory, man. They don't forget.
Oh, sure.
Okay? I don't think they ever forgive what happened to them in the Opium Wars. I feel like they have a hive mentality, and they said, you know what, we're going to get back to the top, and we're going to do it slowly and methodically. And they are more of a hive nation where they, you know, will sacrifice individuals for the whole. I think Americans, especially our leaders, are willing to sacrifice the nation for themselves.
Oh, and I think
it's pretty evident, and I don't care what side of the aisle you're on, we live in one of the most corrupt times in the history of the U.S., where nothing is being done to make the life of the better for an American. Taxed beyond taxed.
Oh, okay, yeah.
$20,000+ I pay for this building that I own. Okay, four families. $20,000. That means one of the four apartments goes to the government. I mean, are you kidding me? Then you're taxing me on tolls. Then you're taxing me on income tax. Then you, it's just, this is not the way our founding forefathers planned.
No, if citizens should not fear their governments, governments should fear their people. And
you see the role in LA?
Yeah,
it's like the Walking Dead down there.
I've been here coming up on a decade, and the LA that I arrived in, and that I, you know, I've been traveling back and forth Chicago, LA for acting gigs and stuff like that. But you know, the LA that I arrived in when I set up shop out here in 2015 changed within it's only gotten worse, and it's unbelievable when you think about. You know, we give government all this power, whether it be through taxes or their ability to regulate us, their ability to tell us and what we can and can't do. And then they don't live up to their responsibilities to just keep the streets clean, to keep a mentally ill off the sidewalk.
Gavin Newsom doing all this stuff for people that came illegally. What about the citizens? What about the homeless of LA? What about him wearing a mask? Making everyone wear a mask, and he doesn't wear a mask. And Nancy Pelosi did the same thing. And I'm not just picking on the left. The right did it too. So
sure.
My point is, when are we, as brothers and sisters in this nation, going to realize that the people that we should be looking at and being angry at are the ones that we, supposedly,
yeah,
we gave power to,
right,
that are supposed to have a social and fiduciary responsibility to the people that they govern, that a true leader should be willing to sacrifice their own comfort for the right of the people that are under them. That is a true leader. A true leader is not someone that even seeks power. The people seek to put them in power because the people recognize their ethical compass. They can tell this person is honest. It's not because they're dumping millions of dollars in ads and lobbies and sponsorships to become the mayor of a city, and then they turn around and return all those favors with contracts and zoning, and it is so corrupt to the
core. Well, this is the thing, and like not to interrupt here, but the point you're basically making is we at any time can decide who to vote for or not vote for. You know, it's coming up. You know, this November might be the first time in my voting life where I either don't vote for president or I vote for a third party or an independent candidate. And people will tell me that's a waste of time, Kyle. You're throwing away your vote. I'm like, well, if all of us agree that these clowns at the top were literally stuck with the same choices again, if you don't like that, there's nothing to stop all of us or most of us from writing somebody in, voting for a third party, voting for whomever. There's nothing to stop us. This is one of the things that annoys me about contemporary American society is we have the internet, we have social media, we can get the word out about whatever we want. Yeah, I know there's crackdowns and there's censorship in certain quarters, but there's nothing to stop us from saying, okay, are you really sick of it? Are you sick of the clowns on the right and the clowns on the left? Well, put your money where your mouth is. Either you run, you convince somebody else to run, or fine. Vote for one of the alternatives. Vote libertarian.
You know what the problem is, guy?
Whoever it is, nothing is stopping you.
You know what the problem is? I don't care if you get the greatest leader that has ever existed on the face of the planet, ever, in the history of the world, to become president of this country. If everyone below that position is corrupt, senators and Congress people that have been in power for 20, 30 years, okay, it doesn't matter who's president. That's why people are like, oh, he's going to, Donald Trump. Donald Trump's going to save us. No, he's not. You have to save us. The American people are the only ones that can save this nation. No president can save this country. You as an American can be paying attention to what your mayor is doing, what your governor is doing, what your senator is doing. And when they do what's grossly wrong, take to the streets. Boycott. Yeah. You know, action.
Or how about this? How about this? Nothing against protesting, nothing against marching, but I'd like to see these folks that pour into the streets, pour into their senator's office, pour into their representative's office, pour into the city hall and ask to talk to the mayor. These people work for us. Going and walking down, Wilshire Boulevard and kicking in, the windows of Starbucks doesn't do anything. Show up at city hall, show up at your senator's office, show up at the governor's mansion. I guarantee you they will be ready to listen.
There was one in protest, man, when you're attacking your fellow citizen. What the hell did they do to you?
Yeah, absolutely. It makes no sense.
So that,
if you want to change the power, go to the power. Go to
I understand why people were angry.
Sure.
But you can never justify attacking another one of your fellow citizens. You just can't. Even if you don't like what they're saying, that's the whole point of this country. We need to be able to hear each other out, period. The fact that censorship even exists on these platforms, which in my opinion should be guaranteed to protect the First Amendment, okay? Because they have become the public platform. They have become the modern version of where protests happen and thought is provoked and opinions are swayed. So for any side to be suppressed, whether left, right, middle, down, up, I don't care what side you're on. Right. None of that should be censored because that is very dangerous for all of us.
Oh, absolutely.
All of us. Because it's only a matter of time before they use those rules on you. Just like some people would state that it benefited the left when they were protesting, with Black Lives Matter, the Police Reformation Act, and all that stuff, right? But now the left seems to be pushing more of a pro-Palestinian, agenda. And now they're starting to get censored. Like Sean King was taken off of Instagram. And again, I'm not into who's right or wrong here. I'm talking about just the optics of all this, right? So when it worked, and I hope that the left woke up with this, because the left was all about, shut him down and censor Donald Trump. And I don't give a fuck about Trump, any of them. My point is this. When they were censoring all those people on the right, you guys were cheering it on. And now that it's happening to them, and I'm glad it's happening to them too, because that's a wake-up call. That's what I've been saying since day one. If you allow even the person you can't stand to be silenced in this type of a world, in this type of a society that they're slowly trying to create, where everything is done online, this is where the public opinion is swayed, and X, formerly known as Twitter or Instagram and YouTube, if this is allowed to be censored, where we're talking like this, we're not even posting crazy videos, we're having conversations like this. If we can allow anyone to be censored, then it's only a matter of time, and it is a guaranteed that it will be you next that is silenced. And that is not happening to them when it comes to the Israel-Gaza war. They're experiencing it now, and it backfired on the left in many ways, if you actually analyze it. So the truth here is we cannot allow anyone to be silenced.
No.
Because to silence anyone is dangerous for everyone.
Well, this is really the crux of it, that, okay, maybe we don't have all the answers right now, but I guarantee you, if you start censoring people, we'll never get to the bottom of it, because we need to be able to your point, be able to share knowledge, express ideas, and argue about them and debate them in order to come to a mutual understanding, even if we agree to disagree about, okay, fine, you know what, I don't like what you have to say. But my God, you have a right to say it. And it's so interesting that, again, going back to history, we've done this before. And it's always people who are leading the charge for censorship always seem to think that they're going to be the ones that are exempt from it. And like what you just said, the things that they were calling for, or different quarters were calling for in 2020 and 2021. Now they're getting the blowback. And, you know, the right does the same thing. I remember growing up, you know, in the 90s, and there being, you know, all this moral haranguing about, you know, rock lyrics or hip hop lyrics and so forth. And, you know, that was left and right that were happy to, you know, censor music. So it can come from any quarter. And I think that, what is it? There's a Jefferson's quote that liberty, the cost of liberty is eternal vigilance. So there's never really going to be a time where you can just sort of sit on your laurels. You've got to consistently be able to, one, fight for your own rights, but just as much fight for your perceived adversary's right to say their piece too. Because, you know, once you shut that guy, I don't like what the Catholics have to say. I don't like what LGBT has to say. All those Muslims are bothering me. You might be able to quiet them for a while, but it's going to blow back on you. And we all have to be free to converse, to talk, to get in heated arguments if we want to, because you give them an inch and they will take a mile, because that's what they've always done.
Censorship under any circumstances. Again, I'm not talking about seeing graphic images. I'm talking about just freedom of speech.
Sure.
Must be protected at all costs for all of our benefits, regardless of where you're at or where you're from now. My people, you know, lived in a darkness for 40 years where they couldn't even speak freely in their own homes. They were terrified. So unless you want that type of existence,
right,
or a dictatorship and AI, and they're going to monitor everything you say, and that's, they're already here pretty much. We need to wake up, be vigilant, as you say, and really pay attention to what's happening, because if we lose these fundamental rights, then this country doesn't exist anymore. And it's getting very close, right, to not existing anymore in its essence. And yes, we have a dark past. And yes, there was many people that were denied those rights earlier in our history. But my God, we came a long way, and now we're going to throw it all in the
garbage. Did we? No, we've come way too far to give it all away now. And this is, again, you know, I guess maybe, you know, maybe to put a pin in it here, why I like you so much, why I enjoy you, why I think that you and your show are so important, is because you're not just some guy shooting his mouth off. You know firsthand. You know what it's like to lose 30 members of your family in a war where your own people were denied their rights, their freedoms, their ability. You know, and you can bring that message to people and say, hey,
it's a protest.
This is, I've seen this before. You don't want to do this.
You don't want to go down at this. Like, don't open up door. Don't open up that door. I'm telling you, if you open up that door, we're finished. You know, it's like in Ghostbusters when he's telling the guy, and the first Ghostbuster, like, don't pull that switch, man.
Right.
We don't pull that switch. When he pulls the switch, all the ghosts get released. So, like, you know, it's like, it's common sense, man. If we can't speak freely, then we're not a free nation. Simple.
Yeah.
We're supposed to be the role model. We were the role model, supposedly, for most of the world. And if the country should perish, and to think that it can't collapse would be naive. And to think that we can't fall when greater empires that were the superpowers of their time, ancient Egypt was a superpower for its time. They had skyscrapers that are still standing called the pyramids. Right? Rome, the Empire. All these different empires, the British Empire, where are they now? So my point is, we cannot be arrogant. We are in danger. We are in trouble. This is probably the most important election ever. I have an opinion that we won't even have one. Let's see if that comes true. I just have this gut feeling, I've had it for 3 years, that there probably won't even be an election. I want to see if my gut's right. I hope I'm wrong. But I have a feeling something catastrophic may happen, and we might not have a freaking election. This is what my gut is telling me. It's what my instincts are telling me. I don't know why, but that's just the way I feel. Now, I drove cross country from New York to LA about 2 years ago. I'm really behind on the project. I was filming a documentary about my life, and I stopped all throughout America, and I met with so many different people. And I can tell you wholeheartedly that we are divided as it can be. We are so divided right now. I just don't see how we can get these two sides together. They don't have to agree on everything, but there's got to be like this common ground where it's kind of like, listen, you want to do that with your life? Cool. Don't bother me and my kids.
Right.
You will do that all you want. Fine.
Sure. Well, this is the whole point. And I think part of the reason we're quote unquote so divided is because we aren't getting the reminder of the unifier of American people. Like you can be, let's say, for example, let's say you're a guy in Wyoming who has three gun safes. You like shooting, you like guns, you've got multicolored AR-15s and you like going out on your land and shooting. Cool, great. And then on the other side, you've got somebody who is maybe a transgender drag queen who owns a nightclub somewhere in New York. These people never have to come into contact with each other. These people never have to mix it up, but they both have to understand that they have to respect each other's individual rights to choose their values, to choose their own lives. And as long as they're not enforcing it on each other, that's what it means to be an American. And the problem is, I think the far left and the far right are trying to force each other or the American people to be involved in people's lives in a way that we never had to be before. I don't care who you sleep with. I don't care who you marry. I don't care what church or mosque you go to. That is none of my business.
Maybe you don't care at all. Who cares?
You know, or yeah. And so whatever it is, like you do your thing and I'll do mine. But I think the ethic we need to bring back for this country is live and let live. It's not that hard. You need to pull yourself out of the outrage cycle of social media. You got to start reading and start acknowledging that everyone has a right to their own life. And as long as you're not infringing on it, that's the Americanness that I think we're missing right now.
Smoke if you want to smoke. You know what I mean?
Exactly. So if you want to smoke, have a drink or not.
I want to open up a bar that lets people smoke inside. And everybody there knows there's plenty of bars that have no smoking. I mean, I think we've gone too far with certain rules and regulations. I mean, democracy, free society, if we all agree that we want to be smokers, I'm not saying this is a great example, but I think it should be this simple, actually. We all want to smoke. We have a bar that every blue wants to smoke or is not bothered by smoke, then why the hell should the government tell us if we can or can't? They like taking the taxes, right?
Oh, yeah.
Picking a $2 pack of cigarettes costs $18 in Manhattan. That $16 is going to them. So at least let me enjoy it. If I'm dying, I'm dying. So it's eating too much. So it's just two McDonald's.
Yes.
You know, so where do we draw the line where they have the right to tell us the quality of our lives? Now, do I think we should be smoking in public places? Absolutely not. Do I think we should be smoking in airports hot? No. But if someone for recreation, because people drink, why, drinking's good? Drinking's healthy?
Right.
So, okay, alcohol's healthy, but cigarettes are not. So, like, they're both bad.
Right.
One would argue.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. It's this, the moral busybodyism of our age, whether it be left or right. Again, if I own my bar and I want people to be able to smoke, no one should be able to tell me that I can't. And if you don't like to smoke, you don't have to come to my bar. Like it's so easy. If you don't like stand-up comedy, nobody's telling you to get a Netflix subscription and to watch Dave Chappelle so that you can be offended. Like you just don't watch it. If you don't like the Beck Lover channel, you don't like Kyle, you don't have to watch us. You know, if you don't let, you know, for example, I don't drink, I don't smoke weed. You know, there's lots of stuff that I don't do, but I have family members that do. They don't do it to excess. They have to drink every once in a while. As long as they're not hurting themselves, they're not hurting other people, who gives a fuck, honestly?
Yeah, I don't think, you know, sometimes people to smoke where there's other people that don't smoke.
Right. I mean, yeah.
You aren't hurting those people.
Right. I mean, if you're in a public place, of course.
If we are outdoors or if we are in a institution or an establishment that is for smokers, that's a different story.
Right.
Like
and I think that's the thing. It's like people have to learn how to, like, whatever you're into, whatever your thing is, you do that. And you have every right to create an establishment that's dedicated to whatever, as long as it's consensual, I don't really care. But what I'm seeing right now is there's this weird overreach that where we're trying to force people to participate in other people's lives when it's completely unnecessary. And that breeds resentment. And we just have to get back to, again, live and let live. You do your thing over there on your time, in your space, and I'll do mine, whatever that thing may be, whether it be going to church or it be going to a nightclub. Again, these people have nothing whatsoever to do with you. Just to do your own thing, but don't try to force me. It's real easy. Real easy. But yeah, man, Well, I guess I could talk to you for hours, and I know you've got things to do. But man, I really appreciate your time, Beck. I think you're an original. I think you are exactly one of the things that the culture needs right now. Just open, straightforward conversation. Intellectual honesty is so important, man. And again, we really appreciate your time, man. I wish you continued success. I know you're going to skyrocket. I'm going to be able to say, I know when I had Beck Lover on my podcast. And I so appreciate it.
I'm going to let you take me to Craig's when I come to LA.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Anytime. Anytime. We might be there for 4 or 5 hours talking.
I'll be in LA shortly, God willing. And I'm glad you survived that boulder, but that's literally how fragile this life is.
Is it?
And you know, this life is a flash of an eye. You just never know if you have tomorrow. That was actually the first clip I ever had that went viral. I was on Brad Lee's podcast. He's a huge podcaster, you know, big influencer now, and we became friends as he was rising up. And when I went on my first show with him, I spoke about 9/11, and you know, the greatest lesson I learned on that day was that you just never know if you have tomorrow. A lot of people took those sound bites and mixed it with the Rocky moment, you know, because I was talking about how Apollo Creed, when he was training Rocky in Rocky 3, I believe it was, when he lost to Mr. T, and he was telling him, like, you know, tomorrow, he's like, there is no tomorrow, Rock. Like, you don't know if you have it tomorrow. If you have someone you need to talk to, if you have something you need to say, if you got something you need to fix, we can't, and I'm guilty of this, man. I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm perfect. I procrastinate on things. I'm not going to lie. Like, he's sitting in the studio right now. It's full to the top with papers. I'm still smoking, even though I promised I wouldn't after the new year. I quit for 10 years. I had a very rough year last year. And unfortunately, out of the stress, I kind of broke. And I can't believe that I'm smoking. I hate cigarettes. Mm-hmm. I just went to my doctor. I got the patch. Actually, as soon as I finish here, I'm going straight to the gym. I'm signing up for it. And I'm going to quit smoking again. It's the worst thing I ever did back then. And it's even that much more stupid and more harmful than I can't, but it is unfortunately very addictive.
Right.
Other thing, like, if you're young out there, man, please don't smoke, man. You're destroying your life. It affects my quality of life.
For sure.
For me to not stop, who am I to blame? I'm going to blame myself, right?
Right.
So doing what's important, doing what's right is not easy. Sometimes it's going to be pain. Now, when I go through a drill, I go through a lot of pain when I quit smoking. The first time I quit, it took me 2 weeks in bed to quit. That's how bad my withdrawal was.
Wow.
And not as bad as heroin, but it sounds like it. I was literally bedridden for 2 weeks. Mm. So today I actually had a thought before I came here, and I'll close it with this. Change is truly change when you act upon it, when you know you've done something wrong. Whether it's in your marriage, your relationship, at work, your health. And when you want to change, there's gonna be some pain, man. There's gonna be pain. Yeah. You're not gonna get something for nothing. There is nothing without something, right? And that something is pain. When you're trying to change and evolve, and maybe you have developed a horrible relationship, you know, or a reputation out there. Maybe for the first 20 years of your life, you were a complete fuck up. You can't blame people for not trusting you. You can't blame people for not wanting to do business with you. But if you truly recognize what you did wrong and you work slowly towards amending that and maybe reaching out to someone specific, listen, I don't expect you to do anything with me. I just want to let you know I'm sorry. I was very immature. I didn't realize how important this was, the way I acted. I'm just ashamed of myself. And I want to say I'm sorry. I've apologized to people in my life. I've made mistakes in my life.
Sure.
I've let people down. I've let family down in my past. I'm not an angel. None of us are. But I think when you can acknowledge your mistake and you can make amends, and even if people don't forgive you, at least you can start to forgive yourself. You can say, you know what? At least I did the right thing after. I went and said, I'm sorry. And you change yourself slowly. It's a process to change.
Absolutely.
It's like when a caterpillar goes into a cocoon. I don't know if you've ever heard, there's a story, like the caterpillar goes into the cocoon, right? And when it comes out a butterfly.
Right.
But for the butterfly to come out of that cocoon is very difficult. So this boy is passing by. He sees the butterfly breached the cocoon. He's trying to come out, struggling. So he decides to take a little scissor or a knife and open the cocoon so the butterfly can just get out. Well, guess what happens to the butterfly? This is a fact of nature, by the way. That butterfly will die. Do you know why the butterfly dies? Because the butterfly was designed by the creator to come out of that cocoon very slowly and painfully. So as it does it, it forces its wings to open. So if the cocoon just gets cut open and the butterfly doesn't go through that painful, slow process of coming out of that cocoon, they'll never be able to take flight. And that's like us, brother. When you're trying to change, you're going to go into a cocoon. When my brother passed away, I went into a cocoon for 3 years. I was in pain, man. I reevaluated everything in my life. You did the same thing. You almost had a near-death experience.
Right.
You have this trauma. Okay, that's a blessing from God that you're still here. He gave you a scare. And again, you don't have to use God to describe this, but for me, you know, I don't believe anything happens.
No, it's all good. It's all good, man. It's all good.
You go through this process. You go through the trauma. And when you're hurt, you feel like you're running on empty, right? Because you are. You've been emptied out.
Right.
It's actually a blessing. That pain is a blessing. If you get through it and you look backwards, and if it was a pivotal moment in your life, I don't care what you lost, man. God forbid you lose your kid. It's devastating. Some people never come back from that. I've seen it. I've seen families that have lost their children. It's my worst nightmare as a parent. I'm terrified of that. I pray to God every day nothing happens to them as long as I'm alive. And you've been devastated to a core. There is a blessing in that. You've been, as Hamza Yusuf said, through despair comes enlightenment. It's when you hit that rock bottom, when you hit the abyss of your soul, when you feel pain, because maybe your heart was so solid, and I mean your spiritual heart, where you feel nothing and you were selfish and you just, people, you don't just become heartless overnight. It's a process of years and years. People that come from broken homes and been abused and life destroyed them. A lot of them to cope with that survival, you know, is their hearts become rock solid. They don't let anyone in. They're scared to, and I don't blame them.
Right.
But sometimes when this trauma happens and we lose something that we can't replace, we never see ourselves getting back up. I didn't. When my brother died, I thought I'd never get back up. And in many ways, I'm stronger than I have ever been in my life because of that tragedy. A lot of blessings came out of it, and I would do anything in the world to bring him back. I would still trade everything. I would give him my arms and legs to bring him back. But the blessing out of that trauma was I really reevaluated my life, everything I've been through. I went through a painful process, and that's what changes. Change has pain attached to it. You want to get skinny from being fat, you're going to hit the treadmill. I got to go on a treadmill, brother. It's going to be very painful. I want to lift weights. It's that pain is the proof that you're changing.
Yes. Yes.
It's a side effect of it. Mm-hmm. So if you're somebody, you're not happy in your life, embrace the pain. Use whatever's in your life as fuel. If you're hurting, focus on the things you can fix right now. Money may not be fixed overnight, but maybe you can work on your health. Take baby steps. You'll be amazed how far you get in a year, 2 years, 10 years. I'm proof of it. You're proof of it. We all can do better. We all can be wiser. We have to learn from our mistakes. Try to live a life with as little regret as possible and be cognizant of our time and the people that we give our energy to. And that is my advice for you this year and every year for the rest of your lives. Thank you for having me on your show. And I wish you massive success.
Amen. Thanks, Beck. Ladies and gentlemen, Beck Lover. This has been Cult of Man. Until next time, guys. Thank you.
Happy New Year.
Beck Lover.